When my brother Chris was about five, my parents decided that he could go forward to communion with them. And the custom in our church was to leave an offering at the rail for the poor. And somehow on the way up, Chris got separated from my parents and knelt with other adults and took communion. And as he was coming back down, my mother noticed that both the pockets in his pants were bulging. And she said, "Chris, what's in your pocket?" He said, "Mama, Mama, they got money up there." So we had to have a little reverse education and stewardship, and that's been one of my favorite stories. A couple weeks ago, we asked the question about the membership vow. As a member of this church, will you support us with your prayers, your presence, your gifts? We did spiritual gifts, and today we're doing financial gifts. So if you take out your text, it's the end of 1 Corinthians. It begins with the words, "now concerning a gift," and it ends, "now concerning Apollos." In the center are Paul's travel plans and Timothy's travel plans. And I find 10 guidelines here for faithful stewardship. Paul writes from Ephesus. This letter would have been read in the house churches of Corinth. "Now concerning the contribution for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of the week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up, as he may prosper, so that contributions need not be made when I come. And when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter to carry your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable that I should go along, they will accompany me. I will visit you after passing through Macedonia, for I intend to pass through Macedonia, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter, so that you may speed me on my journey wherever I go. For I do not want to see you just now in passing. I hope to spend some time with you, if the Lord permits. But I will stay in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective work has opened to me, and there are many adversaries. When Timothy comes, see that you put him at ease among you, for he is doing the work of the Lord, as I am. So let no one despise him. Speed him on his way in peace, that he may return to me, for I am expecting him with the brethren. Now concerning our brother Apollos, I strongly urged him to visit you with the other brethren, but it was not at all the will for him to come now. He will come when he has opportunity." This is the word of the Lord. There have been several important men in my life. First being my father, whose middle name I carry, whose mannerisms I unconsciously imitate, and who imprinted me indelibly when it comes to the art of reading the human document and bringing healing art to bear, his being medical, mine being pastoral. Then there was my college professor, Dr. Charles Talbert, who set my brain on fire and gave me the tools to map the biblical text. Charles taught me how to read the biblical document. Dr. Jim taught me how to read the human document. And so I'll now read the Bible and diagnose souls as a general practitioner pastor. My dad's been dead 5 years, and Dr. Talbert's had a stroke. Hardly a day goes by I do not think of both of them with gratitude and a deep desire, even at age 62, to live in a way to make them proud and to carry on their mission in a new way. But there's an unlikely third man who I had never thought of until this week, a man named Frank Britting. It was December of 1979. I'd just been appointed to my first appointment, the Fairfield Circuit. And I was making the enormous salary of $12,000 a year serving four rural churches, as I used to tell people. The bishop thought I was so good, he gave me four. Now, Frank Britting was an agent for Northwestern Mutual, and as a faithful Catholic, God had given him the burden of working with young Methodist pastors and helping them make good financial decisions. So he was recommended to me, and I called, and he drove 30 miles out in the country to meet with me and Lori. And he answered all my questions, and he was not pushy. We bought our first life insurance policy for $50 a month, which was quite a stretch. And Frank became not just an agent, but a friend and a counselor. And once a year for 20 years until he retired, we got together to review our plan. So if you hear that I've died under questionable circumstances, please have Lori investigated. She can move to Italy and start life over with one of the men in the, is it El Divo? There she is. Where is she? Now, one of those guys has got his hair hangs down the curl. I have tried to do it with my hair. It will not work. A father, a professor, and a financial coach gave me pieces of the puzzle, and I'm grateful. From Frank Breeding, I learned about planning and saving, of giving and giving beyond the tithe, and I discovered from Frank the five pillars are a fruitful life. To tithe, to save, to plan, to live as a servant, and leave a legacy. From Charles Talbert, I learned to pay close attention to the text. And from my father, I learned to take time with people. But they're in my head. And I don't just copy them. They are now part of who I am. So I don't want to be too busy that I can't close the door and sit down with somebody and give them my full attention. And I don't want to quit doing primary biblical studies and start stealing sermons off the internet. And I never want to quit giving and receiving from the living God with whom I am in covenant for everything, including my checkbook. These three men, in their own way, left a footprint and an imprint on my life. And if you add Lori to the mix, I'm a blessed man. Do you know that half America does not have a financial plan? Did you know that 7 out of 10 thinks theirs needs improvement and only 16% are highly disciplined planners who know their goals, have a plan to meet them, and rarely deviate? Now, folks, we think of the Apostle Paul as we should, as an apostle, as a letter writer, as a great missionary and theologian. We forget that Paul was also a tradesman. He was an independent, one-man, entrepreneurial business of being a leather worker. Working on saddles, working on bridles, and since Roman soldiers had leather tents, everywhere there were soldiers, there were tents that needed repaired. And where the church could not support Paul, he worked his leather business. He ran a small business. And what he knew about money, he taught other people. Because, see, if you've got a Jew that comes to Jesus, they already know about giving. They pay the temple tax, they tithe, they contribute to the welfare fund through their local synagogue. To be a Jew in the ancient world was already to have a philosophy of philanthropy, of giving to God, to the priesthood, and to your neighbors. But the pagans didn't do that. They watched out for their family and their little circle. And so if Paul's going to teach new converts from polytheism, he has to teach them and model it. And that's one of his jobs as a pastor. And Paul was a disciplined planner. Now, the financial issue before us today is not the Main Street budget. It was special giving. And the Jerusalem church, the mother church, had been in a drought for 10 years and was caring for the poor widows. And they were in trouble. So Paul said, here's what I'll do. I've been planting Gentile churches around the Mediterranean basin. I'll get all those churches in Corinth and Macedonia and Thessalonica and Philippi and Ephesus, I'll get them to give an offering. And we'll take this grand offering from the Gentiles who have received the gospel back to the mother Jewish church. We will apply to the church the principle from the Ten Commandments of honor your father and mother. And the principle is that if you've received spiritual blessing, you should respond financially. The Gentile churches should respond to the need of Jerusalem church because they've received the gospel. This is not about buying the gospel. It's not buying off God. It's not paying for God's grace. It's that if you believe that Jesus Christ matters and the church over the centuries brought it close enough to you, then one way is for you to respond financially. We receive blessings and we give out of gratitude, with the tithe understood as a standard of Christian giving. Now, if you're behind in your giving, please catch up. And some people say, well, I can't tithe. And I say, well, just start with your percentage now, maybe 2 or 3% or whatever you take home, and raise it a percent a quarter and watch God walk with you. In about 18 months, you'll be tithing. I don't know anybody that tithes that would ever go back to tipping. And there are a lot of people who tip who can't believe that they can tithe. And it's just not true. We want to grow you as a giver because a great church has great givers. Because people believe the gospel matters. Now, Paul said that he was to inform them about the needs, but he wasn't to manage it. He said, giving is an act of worship. Therefore, do it on the first day of the week when you come to church. We haven't set up ATMs yet or give by credit card. And we may, but something's missing when people don't give. On Sunday is an act of worship. And Paul said that everyone should be systematic. You should save up something along the way and put it aside. Giving is not to be spontaneous. Giving is to be planned and systematic. And just as you know your blood pressure or your weight, your cholesterol, you should know what percentage you are. Somebody said, well, I give a lot of money to the church. And I said, well, how much do you give? And they'll say, I give $5,000. And I say, you mean 40 years as an engineer and you're making $50,000? What you need to know is the percentage. Are you a 1%er or a 2%er or a 5%er or a 12%er? I'm proud to say that my wife taught me to tithe. I got my Bible, a new Bible, and I put all those tabs on it. And embarrassed, she said, a preacher should know where the books of the Bible are. So I had to go back and cut off all those tabs. My Bible's still lumpy from having to do that. And she said, after a while, Phil, did your family not tithe? I said, we gave, but, you know, Baptist tithe. She said, I'm a Baptist, and you're going to be a Baptist financially, and we're going to tithe. How are we going to do that? Well, we just did it, and we're prosperous. I tell you, I got a real great financial plan. Tithe. Save. Live simply and well, and then let God squeeze you for offerings. I don't have an MBA, but I tell you, that plan is working. So Paul said, giving is worship. Your children should be, if your children get $10 birthday money, a dollar of that belongs to God. They get Christmas money. I tell you, whatever comes through your hands that you have the right to spend, that's tithable. Learn and teach giving. These are principles that you can apply. And Paul was not apologetic. Now, people ask me sometimes, preacher, should I tithe the net or the gross? And I say, which one do you want God to bless? Come on, guys. Some of you know what that means. But a young couple comes to me and says, pastor, we're a 2% giver, but what should our base be? I said, well, Jesus said to give to Caesar what Caesar, so pay your taxes, and then whatever you have left, move the decimal over one point, and that's your tithe, and that's not even higher math. Anybody can do that. And then start giving. And then if you can't tithe, grow. Challenge God. God loves a challenge. So giving is worship, and everyone's to do it. And not everybody gives the same amount. People prosper differently. And don't let giving be a last-minute thing. Don't wait till December and try to catch up if you've got enough. Now, I'm in a place in my life where if God doesn't send it, I don't want it. But if I need it to do my life in ministry, God has a way of getting it to me. That's just my testimony. And when you give your money, you give yourself, because money is congealed sweat. And perhaps the last perversion of giving, that I would give my money without giving my heart. But stewardship is not just about money. It's also about people. And so Paul speaks about his colleagues, Timothy and Apollos. And he says, give your money and develop people. So my question in terms of your stewardship is, are you faithful in your giving? And who are you mentoring? And who are you training? And who are you spotting as a Christian leader that you can raise up? I'm not trying to beat you out of anything. I just want you to enter the kingdom dynamic of trusting God and giving generously and watching what God does in your life. Now, can I promise you some kind of faith promise, some kind of name it and claim it junk that God's going to give you a 100-fold increase by next Tuesday if you would just send to my ministry? No, it's a fraud. It's taking advantage of the poor. What I can promise you is if you move towards tithing, that the 90% with God's blessing on it will go further than the 100% without it. And I can promise you that you will have put in place the cornerstone of a life and a financial plan in which you put God first and manage the rest with the wisdom of God. John Wesley said, earn all you can, save all you can, give all you can. And I know lots of smart families that earn all they can and save all they can. They're disciplined. What they're missing is the third, which is give all you can. And that is a different kind of freedom. Lori and I give beyond the tithe. As an example to you, as a testimony, I'm not taking your salary and not giving back. I want to invest in what God's doing here, and I want you to invest. Do you remember the promise you once made before God? As members of this church, will you faithfully participate in our ministries by your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, and your witness? Take just a moment in silence and think about the question, how am I doing with my promise? Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my hands and let them move at the impulse of Thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for Thee. The amazing thing about this hymn is it takes all our capacities and all that we are and layer by layer puts them on the altar for God. And we need that, don't we? I know I do. So stand and sing with me stanzas 2 and 3.